Welcome. Please press star 6 if you'd like to unmute to participate. And what shall we look at this evening?
This is Pasha.
Hi, Pasha.
Hi. I'm so happy to be on the call and with a group. Despite all that's going on, I feel practice is the most important thing.
Yeah. Again, you know, we've been saying it in so many ways during this time, but one of the things we often talk about is that maybe when people begin practice, they start to, you know, oh, you know, maybe I'll practice at work, and oh, maybe I could use practice in my relationship too, and maybe, and as we go along in practice, we suddenly realize, I don't bring practice into various aspects of my life. Practice is my life, and the various aspects of my life can be brought into that, and this is one of those times where that becomes really clear.
Yes, yes. What I see is when practice first, everything else follows.
Absolutely.
But
when
something is kind of important or for whatever reason kind of made me believe to focus my attention on, then that creates opportunity for conditioning to have the wedge to insert itself, and boom, and it's on top of practice.
Exactly. Yes, that it's driven a wedge between, we could say, in this case, Pasha, and practice. What a perfect, yes, exactly so. It's why urgency is such a big clue for us. Well, it's really important.
Yes.
The stakes are really high here. We can't just let go.
Yes, yes. Urgency, importance, fear. Those were the wedges I saw recently, conditioning, trying to insert. And what I see this being, you know, while supported in practice, can deal with, you know, whatever comes up. Be that important, urgent, or scary, from a place of no fear, support, generosity, you know, how can I help, you know, what can I do? And then I see a lot of opportunities come up from life to participate, to respond, to be there despite whatever is going on.
Yes. Yeah. So it's just such a miracle, isn't it? That place of grace where whether we just come to it after whatever period of time to practice or in some sense forced to it, but that place where something that is feels, wow, this is one of those really real ones. This is one of those really big ones. And there's that grace to turn to practice, to let life lead, to be lived by life, you know, all those ways that we say it. And then once you've had even one profound experience of that, in my experience, that gives us so much ground to stand on in the sense of realizing, wow, so all of those lies of, no, but it's really true and real here and you can't really just let life, you've got to figure this out and make it work, that's not true.
Yes, yes, and that would remind me, my latest bamboozle I bought in was, oh, later, you know, first I do this, and then I'll come right back to practice, you know.
Right.
So
just one quick detour into conditioned mind. I'll be right back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what I see is, and when I choose different paths, okay, I'm going to meditate or I'm going to go do recording and listening. And after that, you know, let's look at what was that thing trying to get in, and then I see it kind of like evaporates, or I'm coming with a different different view that that thing is no longer, you know, how could I, like, it becomes laughable that, you know, and I wanted to choose that, that becomes ridiculous sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. If I'm tracking it, become when you're really seeing it clearly, it becomes ridiculous that you would ever want to choose the conditioned track. Yeah.
Yes, yes. But at the moment, I saw that later, you know, like, it's sort of like conditioning agrees with me. Yeah, yeah, practice is important, you know, but let's do this and come right back to practice. You know, I'm with you. It's like,
right.
Okay.
No, I'm agreeing with you, Pasha. Practice, no, it's definitely important. It's just we got to take care of this one thing first.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Pasha.
Gosho.
Gosho.
Jan?
Jan.
Hi.
Hey.
Oh, I guess what I'm noticing particularly today, but it's been all week, is the gift of no escape. And it sort of ties into what we've talked about before of being on this long retreat.
Yeah.
With the limitations and or expansions, however you want to look at it, the changes, the dramatic changes going on. And it's just, for me, it's almost like a love-hate relationship in that there is such gratitude to see things that have been hiding or just haven't been seen so clearly. But from a conditioned standpoint, it's just hating it, you know. And so, what I'm seeing is that the fight, it's like the fight is on for conditioning.
Yeah.
Fighting for its life. It doesn't, the content doesn't even matter. And so that sort of dramatic undulations, I guess, I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah.
That
seem
more, they seem more, they're more obvious and feeling more dramatic given the circumstance.
Well, and so many people, as you say, have spoken about how the similarities between life circumstances right now and being on retreat. And one of the things we always talk about on retreat is how everything's heightened, right? It's much, it's right there. And in a way, it's incredibly brilliant, really, because, and yet you're on retreat, right? So you don't have to make dinner and you don't have to buy groceries. You don't have to, I mean, you might chop the carrot, but you're not in charge of making the menu, and you don't have to feed the rest of your family and make sure they're getting what they need. And you don't have to interact with people. And if you're grumpy, no one's going to know it. And so it's all of the things that retreat brings on purpose, which is, you know, basically metaphorically and literally sitting in front of a blank white wall, but you add in all of the usual content of your actual day-to-day life. No wonder ego doesn't like it.
Gosh, I'm so glad you described it that way, Jen, because there, it's sort of, I'm not even sure how to say it, but it's something to the effect of just the assumption that's made, the belief that it is the same as retreat, you know, as being on retreat, and I should be able to embrace it the same way. And that's where I can begin to get a peek of that. That's where this, you know, there's that struggle of you should know that old, you know, it's so deeply karmic. You should know how, you know, all of that. And that's the gift of no escape, I guess, because I'm finding that the recording, if I don't do two-handed recordings, which each of these things that are coming up, and they're coming up at a fast pace, it's hellish, you know?
It is. I do know.
But when I do it, there's clarity and, you know. But again, then conditioning wants to take that and say, well, see, there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it.
Right, exactly. And so doesn't it so quietly, as we're there practicing, because we want to, and we know that it's what will take care of us, and what works and all of that, and then conditioning comes in to say, wow, it's so great, you're really doing a good job, or whatever it does, just quietly so that it can just pull you over into the other side and point out, yeah. Well, you're not doing it well there, and that's not right, and why is this different than retreat? This should be exactly like retreat, and you don't get like this on retreat, so.
How did you know that's what it said?
Oh, yeah, well. Well, yeah, and, just one other point, Jan, that I love that piece of, I truly, yes, that piece of, when you do a two-handed recording with each thing that comes up, because that truly is what's possible. I mean, that's, that we can actually, that's what we're saying in that short recitation, every single meditation, right? We'll use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering. And so my experience of that is that when they're coming so quickly, as long as I'm in the game in terms of practicing with it, whether I'm able to get to every single one on a given day or field every single content in that way isn't nearly as important as that I'm in that process.
Yeah, thank you for that. In fact, can you say a little bit more about what you mean by it? I'm sort
because
of on the edge
there's
of it.
And I'd be fascinated to hear kind of if this is your experience with it. But so there's what? There's the spouse and there's the work and there's the, how I feel about the virus and there's the, groceries. How am I going to get groceries? And, all of that comes around that. All those various things. And each one of them could be an amazing two-handed recording. Now, whether I actually have the time or the space or the whatever to go through that entire process, it's hard to say because not the entire process. I mean, you could do a very short two-handed recording. But in other words, with each one of those, whether I'm really going to sit down and do that, maybe yes, maybe no. But what I found is that when I'm in that process with Jen, or however you want to say that, when Jen and life and the mentor and all those folks are in that process together, as the various things come up, there's a sense of feeling held. That is frustrating right now. That feels, whatever is going on. But because I'm so, that skill, that muscle is so worked in terms of being with everything that is, it's like Pasha started us out with, having everything be in practice, then whatever happens, even if I don't have the time or the space or whatever it is right then to stop and do an official two-handed recording, it's still held in the process.
Yes. Thank you for that description. Because what I've also noticed is that when I am taken off, let's say, something comes up, I get caught by conditioning and there's regret or, feeling bad is the pull afterwards. Mm-hmm. That's where that, what we've talked about before too, that expanding the container, is part of that being held, I think, that you're referring to too, because that's what I'm seeing now makes all the difference.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. That when that self-hatred comes in, that critique, that whatever it is, that's a cue to expand the container.
Yeah.
Not a cue to go fix whatever, what happened, and let me see if I can, maybe I'll be more skillful next time, but just simply, all right, okay. I just pictured that, just completely relaxing all the muscles in the body, taking a few nice deep breaths, and just, all right, I know the container is enough to hold all of this.
Yeah. Thank you. There's no way to express the gratitude for all the support we have right now. Morning, now, tomorrow with the masks. I mean, all of it. It's Saturday. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Truly. Thank you, Dan.
This is Michael.
Michael?
Perfect. The way you articulated that I'm on retreat and plus my whole life is going on at the same time, that was a great articulation, and really appreciated that, and it felt like it kind of normalizes what it feels like I'm up against.
It takes the nothing wrong right out of it. I mean, the something wrong right out of it. It puts the nothing wrong right into it.
Yeah, let's hope. Yeah, on a good day. Yes, yes, yes. And kind of related to that, what I noticed is that the first few weeks were okay. I mean, there was a rough day or two, but kind of, you know, practicing along. And then, but last weekend, it felt like I got hit by a mountain of self-hate. And I'm just believing all of it and miserable and just grateful that I practice. It's what I do. I've done it for a long time, and I'm going to keep showing up. And I mean, yeah, this call is, you know, the amount of resources that are available to us now is, you know, makes me want to cry. It's just, you know, it's incredibly supportive, and just a lot of gratitude for that.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, when you have that experience on this call, just, you know, extreme gratitude and just really so happy to be here and all those things, what does it feel like that's, I'm not sure how to say it. I guess, in other words, is there a sense that all of what you're receiving on these calls, that there might be a way to offer that to the guy who, say, was really struggling over the weekend when he hits those really hard times?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I don't know what you touched there, but it's like giving that guy a way out and giving him a break.
Exactly.
And no standards, and because I've noticed, a couple things I noticed over the weekend was you know, the stakes are huge. The stakes are enormous.
Yeah.
And here are your two bad choices. Here are your two. And it's just awful. It's just awful. And to see a way out of that is truly life-saving.
Yeah. And are you saying, Michael, you were able to actually see the two bad choices that conditioning is presenting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, on it, when I get a little distance and perspective on
right.
it.
Right.
Yeah. So just really glad to, you know, be in the flow and the flow of practice.
Yeah.
And play my role and then mute myself and then... you know, like we all do. And what was it said last week? None of us has practiced as much as all of us have practiced.
Together. I love that. Yeah,
I love that. Love that. And, you know, we just we all offer and we all receive the tips and the guidance and we go from there. And then that's our turn again the next time. And then we share that and then keep on going.
And, you know, as you were talking, and I thought of it, too, when Jan was saying it, that, you know, when we're on retreat, regardless of how long we're on retreat for, we know how long we're on retreat for. Which, to me, is another, that's another element I've really been looking at with this, is it's such a metaphor of claustrophobia, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of, wow, how long is this going to go on? And to realize that is going to go nowhere good, that conversation, right? And to realize that's the only reason conditioning would start that conversation is because there's nowhere for that conversation to go.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I feel like, is that's what we're up against. And I wonder if it's why, in some ways, spiritual types are remarkably prepared for something like this, but also remarkably impacted by it. Because, at least in my experience, we tend to be the people who, for whom, you know, if all those things we all use in society to keep our lives kind of whatever, you know, manageable and the voices at bay, and for most people not even seeing the voices, we wouldn't have ended up in practice if those were working really well for us. So in my experience, we tend to be the people for whom those, you know, we're sensitive to those sorts of things, right? So so something like this is going to put us right up against it. And so conditioning, like Jan was saying, is going to go nuts because it's boxed in. It doesn't have any of the outs that we've not even realized it was using. So now that there aren't those things, it really is the, sort of that long game, if you will. And so, yeah, just that sense of, you know, that piece I love that you said, which is that I'm so glad I have an established practice, which I project part of that being, so then when I have a really hard weekend like that, I know, okay, well, there's nothing to do here. There's nothing wrong here. All there is to, quote, do is just keep practicing, which is exactly what you're saying.
Phew! Thank you, Jen. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Michael.
Yeah.
This is Phil.
Hey, Phil.
Hi. I don't know what exactly what I'm going to say, but you know this. I mean, I don't see how anybody could go through this without practice because, I mean, it at the very least, it gives you something to do. I mean, you know, you
watch your, what's going on during the recording, and then we'll meditate, and then we'll have the morning show.
Exactly. But besides that, you know, in each of those steps, each of those activities, there's so much that arises inside and so much to watch and so much to see drop in and so much to see the voices, what they're trying to do and say and, you know, what conditioning's up to. And it's not unlike every day of that I've ever practiced, but these days it's like that's what there is to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's almost, for
yeah.
me at this point, anyhow.
Well, and so it sounds like that. Sorry, say that again?
Well, I mean, just, and all the time, you know, this is just what we do.
Right. So both, that being both the gift in it, which is, wow, I mean, you know, not so for everyone. Some folks like in Sangha are the ones on the front lines, or maybe their lives haven't changed a whole great deal. But for a lot of folks, it's really changed. So it's created much more space for practice. And then also, I think part of it is that challenge that everyone's pointing at, is that a lot of the things I, quote, do are not available to me anymore. And so it really shakes things up.
Well, it does. And it shapes things up. And I think, like we said on another call, you know, which is always what in forever in practice we've done, you know, we just shake things up. And if the life doesn't shake it up, you know, the guide shakes it up, or, you know, just gets shook up.
Exactly. When it needs to.
Yeah, exactly. And there was one part of the Musings article, I mean, the whole thing was great, but something really triggered or tripped in something and just helped me see how what a small viewpoint conditioning has on this whole thing. Because, you know, it would like, if it were in charge, of course, it would like to change the whole government. It would like to, you know, there's all these ways it sees that this should be done, you know, right? That's not happening the way, you know, like that. So, but something came up when I was really looking at some of the things that were saying in that article, you know, about the humans can't in other words, take care of the earth or clean it up or do whatever we need to do to save it, well, then maybe the virus can. Well, yeah, maybe the virus will do it. And it's like, it just, it, what it did was it just opened up a whole larger perspective on what's going on, and that I don't have to let conditioning get in here and get all angry at this person or that person for doing what they're doing, and, you know, like that kind of thing.
Truly.
Out in the government, you know.
Yeah, and it's such a perfect illustration, isn't it, Phil? Because it's so clear that all conditioning is aiming for is it needs to be different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the conditioning that follows me around and that follows you around very likely would spew the same things about how the government should change. But the conditioning that follows somebody else around is going to have the exact opposite things to say about the government, right?
Yeah, well, they're doing a great job.
Yeah, it's all in aid of this should be different, right? There's a problem here, and,
right.
You know, something wrong, not enough. And, I mean, that's all it is.
Exactly.
And I just
when
love
you were
that.
Saying that.
Yeah,
yeah, when you were saying that, it was like, yeah, sure. I mean, conditioning does that to me. Okay, something, this is wrong, and I see it. Oh, no, nothing's wrong, you know. But it's like, you know, wait a minute. Now, this really is wrong. But it's just the same thing. It's just what you're saying. It's just the same thing.
Yeah.
Just making something wrong when we don't know what's wrong. We don't know what's right.
That's right.
And in some ways, it's all a gift. We just don't know what the gift is.
Exactly. So there's the intelligence that animates. Disclaimer, Phil, I've seen that we have a beautiful new musings article, but I have not been sitting down much today, so I have not seen it. I have not read it.
Uh-huh.
But that place of, well, clearly the virus is wrong. I mean, that's wrong. Empirically speaking,
right.
That is wrong and it is bad. You can just picture, right? I mean, however, whatever the image is, but the intelligence that animates, it's like, look, kids, you don't have the big picture here, okay?
Right.
Hang on. I've got this one.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I've got this one. And yet, of course, we're right in the middle of seeing just this little dot of it, and so we don't know.
Exactly.
And it's not what our condition, you know, what the conditioned mind wants to do. It wants to make up all these things about it and make it scary and make it this and make it that and fortress and whatever else it does.
Yep. And we just have lost interest.
Yeah. Well, you know, just to stay with the beauty of the days and the
exactly.
Gratitude of that, well, at this moment I'm alive now, and
yeah,
all
truly.
That is you know, what we can do. And and I just watch the conditioned mind have this need to know, okay, so what's going on now?
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, that is one of the huge advantages, I was just saying this today, of living in the privileged environment, in the sense of, you know, the drive to find out, well, are the cases going up or are the cases going down? Well, I don't,
right.
You know what? I'm not really sure it matters. I'm going to go weed eat the garden. I mean, it matters in the big picture, of course, but it, in the same sense that it doesn't matter in the sense of, I'm here. This is a life. It's being lived, right, to the best of my ability. And
that's
having
right.
that just, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, Jen? We'll never know anyhow, because nobody seems to know anything. It's the biggest I don't know that I've ever seen going on in this whole world. Really is. And I've just, since I've been looking at the I don't know and all that, or the don't know,
that's
you know,
true,
it's like, wow, the mystery is huge right now. It's really showing itself.
Yeah, boy, that's such a good point. Because there's that thing, I think we've talked about this before, where, you know, there's sort of this underlying assumption that the grown-ups have got it. Like, the grown-ups are in charge, right? I think it happened a lot. I think we had a lot of these discussions after that last election. But, like, that sense of, like, oh, we are the grown-ups. In other words, no, no one knows. No one knows. No one is the person who has the information. That's not how it works. No.
Exactly. Yeah. There's just no known out there. Nobody. Nobody on this whole planet knows. And that's and says they don't know. And that's amazing. Except maybe Trump. He seems to know. But nobody else.
We got to get the mystery tape out again.
We do. We do, because I think the mystery is showing, and I just thought this in this conversation, it's showing itself bigger than it's ever shown itself before.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Mm.
Thank you, Phil.
So thank
Thanks.
You.
It's Sarah, Margaret. Sarah, and then Margaret.
Yeah, I have to say, I love these calls on Thursday nights. I just watch. Mm. You know, I just feel so buoyant listening to this, and so I feel so grateful to actually be living through this experience.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
It just feels so, like, you know, you refer to it as a mystery, but it's so magical at the same time that I think you pointed out maybe last week or another day that, you know, what's so incredible is that we're all, everyone on the planet is having a similar experience. And
in fact, I will tell you, Sarah, I don't know if people have seen it, but we just sent out something to post on the Africa website that the folks in Zambia are doing the same thing.
Yeah. And yet we also have this connectivity, you know, and
exactly.
internet and these means of communicating that allows us to share the experience while at the same time, have the experience of quote-unquote isolation. And and I also appreciated what was said earlier about how it really brings sort of the aspects of practice that we struggle with into really sharp relief. Like, it seems so, it's almost embarrassing to admit that I really don't think I grasped up until this point how that line, you know, the focus of our attention, I can't even recite it, you know, that our where we focus our attention is our experience.
Go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that because I project, that's one of those things. It's like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Which has no seeing in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so there you had the direct experience and actually saw it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was just thinking today that, you know, it's so easy to indulge this thought of, oh, I really miss this. I miss X, Y, or Z, that, you know, in my life. And then I thought today, well, gee, when you had it, you didn't really appreciate it. Like, why is it now that it's, you know, why is conditioning setting it up as, you know, this is the, you know, the lament for this thing, and what an opportunity to find the things that you're not appreciating right now, you know, instead.
Yes. What a good point. Yeah. I just pictured, like, okay, well, let's play out the opposite scenario. Let's say no one's allowed to go back to their house. Then all the things I would be so grateful for in my house. All the things, gosh, I wish I just one more time I had gone up to the kitchen sink and washed my hands just once more, you know. I mean, all the people who've lost their houses in fires, you know.
Right.
So just kind
of
turning it on its head, that's such a fun game. Yeah.
Yeah, and it almost reminds me in a way of like a preview of death, you know, that at that moment we're going to have, I imagine all this, let me put it a different way. I had two dogs. Actually, I guess I've had three dogs now that have passed away. But for two of them, they were mobile enough that on the day before they died, they paused on their walk and they looked around almost like almost 360 degrees. And I thought, they're just taking it in. They want one last look at it. Like, I want to remember that when it's all over. And I feel like in a way that I'm almost having that experience a little bit with this, that I'm getting an opportunity to really reflect on the things that I value the most, the things that I've treasured and but haven't fully appreciated. And, you know, that this is, with all this space and time, I can just spend I could spend every day just appreciating.
Yes, yes. So true. You know, as you're talking, Sarah, it reminds me of we've had some glorious rain in the last while here. And, you know, we're capturing as much as we can of it. And the water splashing into the trash cans under the gutters make the most delightful shapes and ripples. And each one is completely its own thing. And the other day there was this bubble. I mean, this happens all the time, but it's one of those, I just really started to notice it. So the bubble's, I don't know, maybe a half inch across. And it has this whole moat around it, and the, you know, the bubble is raised. And in that bubble is a perfect reflection of the clouds and the trees and the sky above it. And you just think, oh, my goodness. Creation, existence, I mean, life, it's unbelievably extraordinary. It's endless what we could be fascinated by.
Yeah, and it's like, it's almost like God saying, like, I'm taking away your bad TV shows. I'm taking away, like, all the distractions, and I want you to notice the bubble and the reflection.
Yeah.
And, like, it could turn us all into poets, you know? Like, it's...
Truly.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah. So it's just, this is probably, I think these calls are probably the highlight of my week, because it just, it allows me to move so quickly into that place of appreciation. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. Margaret?
Well, me too.
It's
a good place. I just love that bubble description that you just shared. And the mystery, the little mystery tape, it is time to bring that back. It's never a bad time to bring that back.
So it's for folks who may not be, and actually older timers than me may have to help me out. Maybe you can, Margaret. But it was a cassette tape that was like, I don't know, maybe not even five minutes probably, right?
Maybe a bit longer, maybe seven,
maybe
something
a bit
like
longer?
That strikes me,
It was a young boy, I think it sounded like, the voice, and he just, this lovely going through, you know, not mom, not dad, not the president, not a king or queen, nobody knows what anything is, and it's just this lovely recording that takes you right to the mystery, and that's what it's called, the mystery tape.
Yeah, and it is, everything is okay. I mean, there is nothing wrong after that. It's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And, what I've been treasuring is, I think it was during the facilitator shared last Saturday, something from Sherry about how, I think it's basically that every thought can lead to or does lead to a train wreck, something along those lines, not just the bad thoughts, but the fantasies and, you know, and... Gosh, that has just been so, it just struck me so deeply when that was shared, how that process works to get me off and away. And how it's worked in, you know, in meditation and, you know, in pretty much a lot of parts of my everyday life. And now there's just this excitement about, wow, okay, like that time, I didn't see the middle part, but it sure led to a train wreck at the end for a horrible outcome at the end of that little, you know, that thread that was going along. And it's just so helpful and amazing to see that after all these years of practice.
It is so helpful. Yeah. And Margaret, what would you say has been so helpful about seeing that?
Well, just seeing what a distraction that it actually has been, and that it was a process that, you know, is part of conditioning, you know, that almost like a rut or one of those grooves in the, a place to go to be in a fantasy, you know, and I think of it as a pleasant way to be, you know, as a
right. I like pleasant. This. I want to think about this. Yeah.
What's going to be wrong with this? You know, this is like, and so actually just looking at it from, you know, just bringing up that whole process of inquiry about it. And is that really so for me? Apparently not. And I can look at a couple years ago when I was struck by just that recognition or that awareness of the fantasies coming up, and like almost like somebody shared sort of the same question in one of the daily shows about how should they pursue those or not, and and it was just so helpful, the discussion that followed after that and the guidance from Sherry at the same, you know, about, well, look to see, you know, whether that's the case or not. And anyway, it's just, that's what's, because I see that happening a lot during the day, that there are just, I'll be going along during the day, and this thought will come up now in particular about sort of like, why should I even do that? I may not live long enough to see that, you know, or why, this is not, I don't even need to do this now. This is, you know, there's just... awareness of a different intensity more focus, because it is like a special, you know, like we were just talking, or I was just listening to the discussion about like going on retreat, but adding in all the usual day-to-day stuff of our lives, you know, my usual day-to-day stuff has kind of diminished because I retired and I'm getting a little bit older and less able at the moment to be as mobile as I'd like, not because of the virus, but just because of some physical issues. And so it's like my life has become smaller in a way. So it sort of feels like a really interesting thing to be able to see everything that's going on, or to see more of all that stuff, you know?
Yes. And well, I don't know if this is a piece of what you're pointing at, but it's easy to see how, you know, folks who we hear about people, you know, when they got really to the place where, wow, what I want to do is wake up. That's what I want. Their lives tend to get much simpler, right? Wanting to get to a simpler place, because we're not then pulled in so many directions. And it sounds like that's a piece of what you're saying, is like then you're really able to see kind of what's going on in all these different arenas. And what a really helpful time to have your own direct experience of realizing that being off in any kind of a conversation with conditioned mind, right? Quote, good, pleasant, I like it, I want it. To have your own direct experience that's leading to a train wreck, in my experience, is so helpful, because it really helps something like the two-sentence rule to come alive. Not like, okay, I'm not supposed to, I shouldn't do that. But because I've seen, I actually don't want to have another train wreck. I just want to be here. And when we're here, all the various things that are happening in our lives, it's like what Pasha said, when I'm staying here, then everything that happens, almost comes to me here, and by definition is seen in awareness.
Yeah, and as part of the mystery, because I'm just here and present rather than in what's next, which is what I've been doing what now instead of what's next.
What now?
What now? And the mystery.
Thank you.
So lovely. Thank you so much.
So lovely. Thanks, Margaret.
This is Laura.
Hey, Laura.
Hello. What I was hoping to talk about is a very familiar process, and I'm just seeing it manifest, I think, here in my new circumstances,
mm-hmm.
which is not having enough time.
Wow.
And there's this frustration of, like, we're in quarantine. I shouldn't
that is a ripoff. That's the one thing I shouldn't have to deal with here.
Right? Like, I shouldn't. People are talking about, oh, now we have so much time and we're going to do all these things. And there's kind of a sense of, like, well, like, yeah. But.
So getting to see, oh, okay, well, that process is now finding a way to come in these circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of this crazy thing of, like, well, all those lucky people who lost their jobs or don't have anything to do, that would be great. But me, who still, mm-hmm. you know, is working, like, that, you know, and then it's like, I can see that is, you know, like, but in that place, it feels like having a job is like this victim place, like.
Right. Right. And that's kind of like what we were looking at with Sarah, right?
Yeah.
Of that place of, okay, well, let's play that out, shall we? Right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't want to have that conversation. No. Let's not actually look at what that would be like.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have a job and I had no income and
mm-hmm.
and not sure when this all was going to end and therefore how that situation was going to change for the better. No, let's not look at that. Let's not have that conversation.
Right. Yeah, and so I feel like it's helpful, you know, and at first it was like the first week we were in quarantine, I was seeing my boyfriend like almost every night. So then it was a story of like, well, I'm just, you know, I have to spend so much time with him. Like, I didn't have to do this. And I really should be feeling so spacious right now. And I'd be feeling so good and be great. Then the next week I didn't see him at all. Still didn't feel like I was spacious and, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so it's, you know, I think it feels like it is helpful to see that, I mean,
that it's running that scam again.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. And that there's sort of, because there's less going on, it's a little bit more apparent than it is.
Yeah. And do you have a sense, Laura, of, okay, so if I did have enough time, you know, so for example, first it was, well, if I wasn't spending all my evenings with him, then, you know, I'd be feeling spacious, and now I'm not, and I'm not feeling spacious. And what does that mean? Like, if I had enough time, I would be, what would that?
I guess that I'd be having the experience of, like, the bubble, you know, like, that I would be, I don't know, like, the word that's coming up was, like, I'd be in the magic, you know. I'd be,
yeah,
and sometimes there's sort of a, like, I'd be able to do all these really cool things and everything, but it's like, that's really what I feel like it would get, like, I would feel alive, I would feel excited and engaged and, you know, like,
uh-huh. Yeah. And do you work with a schedule in your days?
No. I mean, I sort of de facto have one because of work and all that stuff, but yeah.
Right. Well, the only reason I ask is that I just pictured, I know for me, one of my very favorite practices has been, I always talk about it as following Jen around, right? So I just notice, like, what works for Jen and what doesn't work for Jen and what she loves and what, and of course, things like looking at a bubble in the water, there being space and time for that, Mm-hmm. Karmically, no, not so much. Way more important things to do than that. And so it's my experience that in the more, let's see, it goes back to the two-handed recording thing we were looking at earlier, I think, with Jan, that it's my experience that we just start to fall in love with that person who we're getting to know so well and who, you know, struggles with this and struggles with that, and she does. Like in this case, okay, she gets tortured about time. That's what the voices love to do to her, right? And the part of the reason that's a big thing for her, it sounds like, is she really wants to be in that mystery and that magic, that place of wonder. That. So then how about we schedule time for that?
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes as important as anything else.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, I mean, one of the things I've seen with that practice is that doesn't mean I'm now scheduled for 15 minutes to feel blissful, right? Mm. Because that's the way conditioning would want it to. Well, that didn't work. What a huge waste of time that was. But in my experience, it's a practice of whatever it is, you know, for those minutes or hours or whatever it is, I'm going to, whatever, sit next to that potted plant. I'm going to look at the tree, you know, in the park. I'm going to, whatever it is, and I'm going to do it. And it doesn't matter how I feel. It doesn't matter whether I have some magical whatever, you know, what conditioning will call some great spiritual experience. I'm just going to make time for that. And then over time, just that process of that being prioritized, in my experience, starts to shift things to presence, which I project is what you're describing when you say you want to be in the mystery and the magic and the openness and the, because that's presence, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the word that was coming up as you were describing that is like, it sounds like just a making space for whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well put.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, making space for whatever's there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited to practice with that.
Yeah, it'd be fun to hear. And I'll tell you just one other thing from my experience. The most helpful and crucial component is to stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like for as long as you possibly can, months and months and months and years, and just keep doing it, just like meditation.
Yeah, that's good, because I can see that there'd be a lot of places for it to be derailed, so that's...
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Laura.
Carolyn?
Who's that?
Carolyn.
Hey, Carolyn.
Hey, Jen. Thank you so much. I have this picture of coming to sit close to a big fire and watching as different folks throw a piece of kindling on and it blazes more brightly. Mm. And that it doesn't, you know, there's a conditioned thing of, oh, it has to be a certain size or you don't have enough to throw on the fire. And it was like, it doesn't matter. I have a little twig.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Yes. It's so perfect with what we're talking about, Carolyn, because not only is it enough, but it's the magic and the mystery as much as anything else is, that little twig.
Yes, and it will throw sparks up into the sky and you'll follow the embers and then see the stars. You know, it's only conditioning who would want to measure the size of what you want to contribute.
Truly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I've really been aware of how supported I am by practice and everyone who does practice and wanting to show up in that way of here's what I can offer, not from a place of me, but in a place of here's what life wants to express through me.
Yes. It's that gratitude wants to give place, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
Yep.
And so there are little things that happen during the day that are so delightful. Like I'll find myself on a walk and I'll get to this place where I start to look at other, you know, and I'm fortunate that I can walk in a place that's pretty rural and I don't run into too many people. But when I do, I can tell what's going on by my reaction to that, the other, so to speak. If I'm, you know, in that place of conditioned fear, I look at the other person as, and I almost hate to say this out loud, but this is what conditioning does, as a viral host.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I do. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But what dropped in when I recorded about this was I don't want to go to that place of making it about the other and then stigmatizing all people. And so what dropped in was the mentor said, well, you can just say, I love you inside your heart to everyone you pass.
Mm. Which is true.
Yes. And so I did that and it was like, it was like my feet didn't touch the ground.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so to take something that you know, ego is screaming at me, danger, but to look at it from, you know, what you were talking about earlier, we're all in this together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if this person isn't hearing me say this silently in my head, there's an energy that's being passed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And so instead of
putting
out fear and separateness, I'm...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I can't remember if we talked about this in this forum sort of early on, but I was just seeing so much the parallels of kind of the privileged environment and what we're calling social distancing now. And how, because, so there's that, you're out on a walk, there's another person. And the reality is, there is a potential viral host there, just like there is in me. And so what we're doing is, to the best of our ability, we're all taking the precautions we need to take to keep all of us safe, which is so what we do in the privileged environment, because we're all hosting conditioned mind. Every single one of us has that. And I have no, quote, control over, you know, if I'm just going around talking, blah, 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 there are times where I'm going to be identified with that and I'm going to act out of that. And that's going to have an impact on other folks. And so when we're on retreat, we create an environment that recognizes that. It's not that there's something wrong with Jen or there's something wrong with Carolyn, because they have that. It's just how it is for all of us. And so we create this environment that's actually incredibly supportive and kind so that we can all be together in that love that you're describing while recognizing the reality of this thing that is in each of us that could harm somebody else.
Oh, that's wonderful, Jen. What I saw in that is we're actually quarantining ego.
Potentially.
It's, you know, it for the love of the love we're willing to protect ourselves and one another.
That's right.
I love you so much.
That's right.
I'm going to protect you from from what I know we both carry.
Exactly. Because we don't know which one of us is going to express that at any moment.
We don't know which direction the transmission will be.
That's right.
So I love you. So I will do this for you and for all of us.
Yeah, for life. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, this has been it's so amazing because it's been a relationship workshop too, because you know, my husband and I, I'm willing to do for him. I know what my ego's capable of.
Not your ego, but ego in you. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Jen. Yeah. Thank you. I know what ego is capable of, and I want to be. Be the person you want to find. I want to be the roommate I want to live with.
That's brilliant.
So for him, I'm willing. It's to up my practice because I don't want to destroy anything.
Yeah. And one other thing about that, Carolyn, just because I bet so many people on the call can relate.
Oh, yeah.
And in that same vein, I project that if he, on a day where he was just struggling and the voices are at him, he did something that, quote, hurt you, you know, or whatever that was, that what you would want for him is to be as kind to himself as he can possibly be in the wake of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carolyn.
This is Ashwini.
Ashwini.
it's been such a wonderful conversation, and I had an insight this morning that sort of goes along the same line that I got to apply as a success in practice. And so my sister's a doctor, and I was talking with my family this morning, and they were telling me about this horrible situation where a patient of hers had something going on and needed to get to an emergency room in order to get it fixed. And they weren't able to find transport because all the buses were not running, and, you know, just this horrific situation of I'm recovering from surgery. I can't get to an emergency room. I can't get to a doctor. And at 3 a.m. in the morning, my sister was on the phone with them, and they basically reported that they were able to fix it because they fixed it themselves by doing something with a tube or whatever it was. Right? It was an ingenious way to solve the problem when they could not get to the hospital or to expert places. And the consequence of that was this conversation that we all were having about, or at least started up for me, about, well, you know, these are the horror stories that I keep hearing about, how this person can't do this and how this person can't do that and what's going to happen. And it starts to, in lots of people, especially my parents, the focus of if it goes wrong, if this can happen this way, then if it goes wrong, what do we do? You know, what are the consequences of this and what are the consequences of that? And I found myself getting super identified, feeling disturbed at two things. One, my life is not on the edge like that. You know, I'm not, it's not that I have no electricity and I'm trying to work out how to get water and, you know, those really hard places that people are in with no jobs and no water and no food and traveling thousands of kilometers to try to get home. That's not my reality, right? And so there's a way in which we live in the bubble because we're not in a present, we're not present to, that is not my circumstance, right? And so I was watching the identification and I realized during the radio show, something hit me. And what I realized was, in that recounting of the tragedy, everyone was mm-hmm. focusing on the tragedy, how horrible it is mm-hmm. to be a person who is in such dire straits who can't get to a hospital. But the mm-hmm. reality is, something dropped in for that human being
yes.
that caused yes, yes, them yes. to have yes. to be yes. all right. And we
yes.
and
wow.
nobody caught that. Nobody caught the miracle of, wow, what
yeah.
actually happened is this person is okay. It could have gone another way, but in this instance, it didn't. And we didn't. It didn't cause us all to go to that place of, oh, my God, I'm so grateful that this is the case, and I'm grateful for this is the case, and I'm grateful for this guidance, and but here's the miracle that happened, and here are all these mm-hmm. miracles that I could be grateful for. And what it assisted me to see is the importance that it's important to be able to catch what causes us to suffer, but the focus mm-hmm. on negativity actually robs us of the receptivity to life as it is. It only gives us one perspective, not a totality of perspective.
It robs us of the receptivity of life as it is. Uh-huh.
Right? So that there's a way in which you can only see one half of it because you're trained to see through a particular lens. So I don't get to see the other half of it. And if nothing else, this time seems to be the time for us to be able to see all that we're grateful for, all that is magical, that there's time to look at bubbles and the clouds reflected in them and the world in dewdrops and long periods of meditation. If that might be the gift that we're being offered, that the receptors that get distracted by bad movies, as someone said, now gets removed so I can actually participate and engage in wonder and laughter and delight and all of those things, because I don't see the world as it is. I'm trained to see the world through conditioning.
It's so big. Yeah. You know, because a piece of it, Ashwini, as you're saying that, let's see. So we're each having the experience we're having. And that it almost is the gift that we give back. That's a funny way to say it, but to actually fully have that gift. So, for example, I'm down at a monastery on 320 acres, and it's absolutely beautiful. And the truth is that most of my days are not very different. Today was a little different, but most of our days are not. I was there. I went to do our groceries, and there's a little bit involved with doing groceries right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I just really saw that, you know, I could be in a conversation about, like, okay, bubble. I mean, you're going to spend time looking at this bubble, and meanwhile, look at what's happening in the world. But the thing is that I thought about this too. We've had at least a couple of people in Sangha speak beautifully, eloquently to having the virus. And in both cases, the way what I've projected onto them talking about it is having the experience. They actually had the experience. And so that each of us, like that person, I don't know, you know, who your sister was interacting with, I mean, if they were actually present to that whole thing, that may have been an extraordinary experience, as each of us is hoping the moment of death may be,
mm-hmm.
and that we get to fully have whatever experience that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Whatever, and we won't know that, but to live in a conversation about how horrible it's going to be misses the point.
Exactly.
In both ways, because it robs us of the ability to be there for it. Because I'm training to be in a conversation and not to see the other half of the way in which I could see it. And it's so interesting, the application of that insight, as we had occasion to do errands. And then to watch, it's what Jan was talking about a little while ago, where there's that when we're not interacting, there's spaciousness, but interactions produce collisions and triggers conditioning, right? There's reactivity there. And so that every time that even in this spacious place and in this grateful place, the collision causes a conditioned reaction. And I'm aware of the conditioned reaction, and I'm aware of feeling bad that I reacted. And there's a way in which what that insight allowed me to see is, in that place, that is the place where I want to record and listen, and I want to bring it into conscious awareness, because in those places, I don't have a different way of seeing. And when I train myself to see the other side, or however that expression is, how life is also there, what's the real experience here if I don't have conditioned lenses on? Those are the places where I don't have that capability. And the excitement that I experienced today when watching the reactivity and realizing, oh my God, that's a place where the groove is so grooving. There's no option there except that one reaction. And I so want to have the opportunity to see it differently, and that I have to get identified. So the right way of, within quotes, looking at that is the identification is what's assisting me to see the identification or see through the identification, right? That's the reframe for every identification. It's the same reframe as the person did not die. It's not a tragedy. Exactly. It's actually a miracle. And that's the miracle of identification is I get to see it and I get to see through it. And I get to choose something different, and it's going to take as long as it takes all of the interactions I have for me to have a different experience. And the only way I will welcome it is if I reframe it as welcome.
Yes.
It being the identification.
That's right. It's like Rumi's guest house poem, right?
Yes.
So welcoming it all in. And that, I just love that place that you're describing. It's such a place of freedom. So when we realize, oh, okay, there's so much to see here. I haven't seen it all. And so the identification is assisting me to see it. It's rubbing me up against the edges that had been invisible to me. I mean, it's what people are talking about with this whole, you know, virus retreat, really. It's putting me up against the things I hadn't seen, and there can be enthusiasm for that. Not something wrong, not why am I reacting this way, I shouldn't be, but that I can just use it as an experience to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the defense of the, I was just reading in somewhere that the defense of the ego is simply an indication that the light has not come in yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Like the bowling ball from this morning, right? So then it really becomes kind of a, you know, it's like that, okay, let's do some more errands, just one more time. I really, okay, just kind of on the edge of your seat, right? Just ready to see whatever there is to see there.
With the support, right? That there's enough support that it's not just a react, cope, practice with it, feel better, move on.
That's huge.
That there is an inquiry that is being brought to the process of reactivity, whether it's I process map it or record and listen about it or do the two-handed recording, so that it's not that I have to fix it in order to feel better or be different or have a different outcome or experience. It's simply I want to know that place.
Yes. Well, and I think you just, that is the light, yep. And who was it earlier who was reminding us of the wisdom of no escape? And that word you just used illustrates perfectly why that's so huge right now. You know, instead of just the thing happening and then I cope and get through it, the thing happens, I cope and get through it, the thing happens, I cope, and so much of that coping has been stripped away, so many of those habit patterns.
Yes.
That cover over something like that. And so there's that. All right, here it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Transformation is alchemical. It does change.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jen. I know we're at time.
Thanks, Ashwini. We are just exactly perfectly. So thank you, everyone. And good night.
Good night.
Good night.